We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also very happy to have back on the program once again, licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She's here for a program that we do every month and have been doing for quite a long time now to give people the opportunity to call in and ask questions about diet nutrition and the links between what we eat and our health. And on past programs, we've covered a very wide range of topics. It's really wide open, so that whatever questions people have, they're certainly welcome to call. There is a particular subject that we'll be talking about and trying to take a close look at this morning, and that is foods that may offer some relief from arthritis. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and if people have questions on that, that's certainly welcome. But again, other questions are welcome about diet and nutrition. Call in and Susan will do her best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the numbers are, the number is 333-9455. If you are outside of the immediate area here and it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk. That's just like it sounds, will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about Susan. She is a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's president of Nutrition on the Move. She is an adjunct lecturer with the U of I Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC, the Activities and Recreation Center at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. You can also find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Hey, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Once again, we appreciate it. The main topic, or at least the thing that we're going to start talking about here at the beginning, is arthritis and nutrition. And I gather that for a fairly long time now, researchers have been looking at this question. Is there a link between diet and arthritis? And by doing certain things or not doing certain things, can that help with the symptoms?
Right. Well, and I think that it's becoming more of an interest simply because of the numbers of people who are suffering from arthritis. And a recent review that I looked at and found was really about 22% of U.S. adults suffer from arthritis, about 1 in 5, 50 million people. And the percentage that actually it limits daily activity or daily function is about almost 10% of the population. So that's significant. So when we think about health concerns, it may not get as much press or maybe as much interest as some other ones, but about 10% of the population, that's pretty significant. So certainly, you know, a lot of different things have been looked at in terms of what can you eat to help with that? What are some of the, there's a lot of fads around diet and arthritis and inflammation and those kinds of things. So hopefully we can get through some of those types of things and say, well, what is really true and what's not true around the whole diet area. And I think one of the biggest things that continues to come out is just like a lot of diseases or problems for Americans, we think part of the issue that it's such a big problem or part of the reason is for the reason that people are overweight or more and more people are overweight and obese. And there was one review out that looked at even as little as 11 pounds of weight loss in a large study of women cut the incidence of osteoarthritis of the knee in half. And so it makes sense because extra pressure on the body, and if you're walking with extra weight, that certainly puts extra force on the joints and everything too. So you know, the thing that we're looking at most closely is how can we help people lose weight in the right way that they can keep it off. But on the same time, it's kind of difficult because it may be hard to exercise if someone has arthritis, maybe painful. And I think we've seen an increase in things like looking at water exercise. And there was a new study on Tai Chi and arthritis that was very positive. And so looking at ways that are movement is possible, but not necessarily so hard on the body to help with weight loss. So that's probably the biggest thing.
Okay. So just to start out, you would say you would want to follow the general recommendations for a healthy diet that would promote optimal body weight, because then that the heavier you are, the more stress you're going to put on your joints, and that's going to be more of an issue.
Right.
So sort of aside from that, as you say, I think over time, a lot of people have advocated particular things, particular kinds of supplements, for example, and have said, if you take, you know, in addition to what else, whatever things you do, if you take this thing, it'll be good. And I'm sure that there, from time to time, there have been particular things that have been popular, and then that sort of waxes and wanes. Is there good evidence? Do we have good studies to show that supplementing particular kinds of things actually helps?
Well, I would say the supplement that we look at as probably the most beneficial, or a few of them that look real positive, are omega-3 fatty acids. And so looking at fish oil supplementation, or certainly, as we say, adding more fish to the diet, we kind of recommend in general that people eat fish 2 or 3 times a week. One of the things that is kind of interesting that's out there right now, Dr. Andrew Weil and his work that he does on nutrition and kind of alternative or homeopathic nutrition in some ways too, you know, the recommendation that he has is actually eating fish or seafood 2 to 6 times a week. Well, 2 to 6 is pretty wide range. We don't tend to eat as much fish here because we don't have access to as much fresh fish. But increasing omega-3 fatty acids for certain is something that's beneficial. Now, it's important to note that I think you should treat an omega-3 fatty acid very similar to a medication, because doses of omega-3 fatty acids, maybe 1 gram for most people, won't cause blood thinning. But once you get a little bit higher, there's a potential to cause blood thinning or interact with other medications or things like that. And so while it can be very helpful with decreasing inflammation, it also can have other effects in the body. So think of it as a medicine, not necessarily just a supplement, because particularly if you're on any other medications that are blood thinners, it may change how that medication works. But that would be one of the things that we say, yes, that's a positive that looks very hopeful. So that would be something typically we would do, you know, with clients if they've got arthritis. Another thing that's being looked at quite closely that has some good research behind it are some of the spices. So, for instance, spices like turmeric and more Indian spices have looked very promising, and ginger. Spices like that, adding those to food more often. And in Dr. Will's food pyramid for anti-inflammation, he recommends as much as possible, eat those types of spices as much as you can, because that looks good. There have also been some pretty good studies on tea, looking at 2 to 4 cups of tea a day with the antioxidants that are found in tea may be beneficial. Those are definitely things I would recommend that too, because there's enough data in there. What's kind of interesting is that there was a review that came out recently that looked at 10 placebo-controlled studies. So 10 studies where people either got some type of sugar pill or placebo, or they got glucosamine and chondroitin, which are two supplements that we often think of that people may use to decrease inflammation and decrease the soreness and pain from arthritis. And that big review didn't really find much positive. In other words, said that, well, maybe some people see relief from that. In general, not enough so that we're saying this is something that should be recommended. Now, I've definitely had clients who've seen positive effects or felt that they have, and some of that may be placebo, and some of that may be just in certain people. Those types of supplements really do help. But kind of the national general guidelines we're finding now, really, there's not a lot of data to indicate that there's significant benefit from those. That may be, again, an individual thing that helps some people.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I think physicians, probably many physicians, would say it's not harmful. If you would like to try this, they would say, okay.
Yes.
And you can see if it has benefit for you or not. I think maybe one of the things also I've read about that is that it seems for people who say that they do have some benefit, the sooner that you start taking it, the better. That is, you know, if you have a long-standing problem and then you start taking it, it might not be as beneficial as if you just, when you're starting to have the onset of symptoms, if you start taking it then.
Right.
Which I suppose would make sense if the idea is that it's supposed to help to rebuild the cartilage,
right,
then better to start before you've lost it than late.
Exactly, exactly. So that's true. And it, just like many supplements, you often have to take it long enough to see the benefit. So for that supplement, we generally say stay on it for 2 months anyway to see if you really notice any significant change. And probably don't add anything else or change anything else in your diet at that time, too. So we would know, well, is that really that supplement itself that's beneficial? Mm-hmm. And so that's an area where, yeah, people may want to try it and see if it works. And for some people, it may be beneficial, too. That gets along the lines of making sure that the supplement is what you are purchasing and it's a quality supplement and a quality company and those kinds of things.
Yeah. I like ginger a lot, and mm-hmm. I like cooking with it. I'm not exactly sure how much ginger I could get into my diet.
Yeah.
Has anybody saying that it's that you could? There's some way to supplement that so that you could actually get more ginger than mm-hmm. you know. You could do a stir fry every night, and you could put a ton of ginger in there. But there's only so much ginger you can
eat. Right. Well, you can definitely supplement with ginger. You can supplement with turmeric. You can. There are supplements out there now that are a combination of these spices and things like that. So there's all kinds of ways you could do it. You know, we generally recommend trying to just get it more in food to start with, of course, just like fruits and vegetables. There's definitely evidence that eating more fruits and vegetables, having more antioxidants in the diet, may be protective in terms of a lot of things that deal with inflammation, including arthritis. So obviously, one study that came out not too long ago, men were typically eating 2 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which unfortunately is about average for U.S. population, and they bumped them up to 8 a day. And in that study, the men definitely saw some relief of their arthritis and decreased inflammation, and that was just simply by eating more produce. And so that's another area we know absolutely for sure most people are going to see a benefit. And even if you don't feel a benefit, you're going to have a benefit in the body just by eating more produce for just what it's going to be doing at the cellular level and being protective in other ways. And so that's beneficial. Kind of a newer area that's being looked at with arthritis where people may not necessarily make this connection is looking at the benefit of having a higher fiber diet. And so it appears that increasing fiber, not only from fruits and vegetables, but let's say things from more whole grains, more beans and peas and things like that that have more fiber, that tends to decrease the inflammation, the CRP or inflammation that we might see in the blood. And of course, we've always been interested in that for heart disease and looking at decreasing that with heart disease. But now studies are looking at increasing fiber and how that may help with arthritis. Because again, the whole decreasing the inflammatory process. So I guess that's another area that people may want to pay attention to because it may be something a little bit different. And then there are, of course, a lot of different diets out there and different things that have been done forever, and we don't know for sure if they really do help. For example, you might hear if someone has arthritis, they may have been told to eliminate nightshade vegetables. Vegetables like potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, that these vegetables tend to increase inflammation and cause trouble. But in reality, there really haven't been studies that have said that that's true. That's even something that I learned when I was first a dietitian. That's part of the whole therapeutic process. Well, now we know that that may have been something just folklore more than anything else. And so even though you'll still read that a lot of places, there's a good review if people like to get online and kind of review different topics on WebMD, which is a good resource. And there's kind of an arthritis guide there and kind of a good review on what's really got research to support it in terms of diet, what really doesn't. You know, there I get a lot of questions from people saying, well, I'm going to cut the acid out of my diet. I'm going to go to an alkaline diet. I'm going to try to cut out fruits and cut out sugars and coffee and different things that may cause more acidity. And there's really not research to show that that's beneficial either. Sometimes people feel better or maybe they lose weight on a plan like that. And boy, even 5, 6, 7 pounds of weight loss, they tend to feel better because they have less pressure on the joints. But as far as those particular foods really being helpful, there's not a lot of research behind that.
Okay. Our guest in this hour of focus is licensed, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She's on the show once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions on that or anything else, she'll do her best to help you out. All you need to do is give us a call. We have several people here ready to go. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll start out here with somebody in Sullivan, who's been very patient, and we'll get to them right here on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question about a possible connection between Gatorade and developing kind of like knots in the bottom of one's feet and palms. My partner had an undiagnosed condition that seemed to be relieved by drinking Gatorade because she was always out of breath and couldn't do very much exertion. And then that finally got cleared up, and a doctor mentioned to her that it might be a factor in her additional weight gain. So she stopped drinking Gatorade altogether and then discovered that these knots and the pain she was feeling in her hands and feet went away within a few days. So I wondered if there was anything you might be able to say about maybe a connection between what's in Gatorade and problems in maybe hand and feet tendons, I think is where these knots were.
Well, that's an interesting possible connection. I guess, you know, the doctor was probably right in saying that if she was drinking a lot of Gatorade, that certainly may have been contributing to weight gain, because we usually don't think of it as that high calorie, but it's about half the calories of juice. So if you drink a lot of it, that's a lot of weight, could be a lot of weight. And sometimes eventually decreasing those calories can be helpful. I would say in the short term, I would almost wonder if it was more related to the sodium and potassium and the electrolytes, because she would have been taking in a lot of additional electrolytes. I guess that would have been a potential, you know, when you take in more sodium, you tend to sometimes, some people are a lot more notice being more puffy, or it does kind of affect the fluids and maybe some other things in the body. Sodium's involved in so many things in the body. The potassium amount in Gatorade's really not very much, much less than what you're going to find in a piece of fruit generally, so that's not an issue. But I guess the things that I would think of would be maybe the sodium. Some people, it's rare, but some people in drinks or colored foods or things like that, if they have coloring or certain things in them like that, bother people for whatever reason. And if she wasn't taking in a lot of that when she normally would have been, that might have been an issue. But I've never seen it actually linked to anything like you're talking about per se, that it's Gatorade, but perhaps the electrolytes. I guess that'd be the first thing to come to my mind.
Well, that makes sense. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you. On to another caller here. Champagne, line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. You mentioned, you know, Andrew Weil. I was wondering what the benefits, because he's an advocate for CoQ10. And is it L-lysine, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
And also you mentioned turmeric. What about curry? Is that one better or equal to? I know isn't part of curry. Is there turmeric in there or not? But anyway, I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, well, good questions. I guess I should say first, Andrew Weil, I mean, he's an MD. He's a physician. I certainly... I've heard him speak several times, and I enjoy his books and things like that. But he also does have a lot of supplements that he sells and things online that you can purchase and those kinds of things. So, you know, there some people would say, well, maybe he's trying to sell his own products and those kinds of things. But I think in general, whether it's CoQ10, which is actually a supplement that we do recommend if someone's taking a cholesterol-lowering medication or something, because CoQ10 levels in the body from certain medications can be diminished, you know, and several supplements that can be helpful in those type of situations that he does recommend, I think are reasonable. But it's always good to kind of take a look too and say, well, it's good information, but it's always a little tricky when someone's also selling their own supplement line to kind of be aware of that. And to answer your other question, I'd say just curry in general, yes, that's great, because depending upon the curry you get, the way I understand, you know, with different types of curry, spices may include a lot of different spices in that curry. So Indian spices in general, kind of hot spices in general, those kinds of things have been noted to be helpful. So yeah, if you like curry, that's great. If you like, you know, for some of my clients, they'll eat a little more Thai food. They'll eat more Indian food. They'll try to add a little more spice than what a recipe calls for. Those kinds of things, we really think, hey, that's a great thing to do. That may be very helpful.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and to another caller here. This is someone in Lafayette, line two. Hello.
Hello. In passing, you mentioned the importance of fiber in food. What about fiber supplements? Are they as genuine?
Well, in some of the studies, they've used food for fiber and also fiber supplements, whether that's something like ground flaxseed, which is real high in fiber, or fiber pills that you can take. They're, I think the main thing with some of the supplements with fiber, some of them are pretty significant sources of fiber. They might actually have in a supplement 2 or 3 grams of fiber. Others I've noted maybe have 1/4 of a gram of fiber, which an apple has 3 grams. So you just have to kind of be aware of what you are taking in as far as fiber supplements. Some of them are just not very high. There are other products out there that, are 5-6 grams of fiber per serving of a supplement, and those can be very helpful. So, yes, I think some of the studies definitely look at fiber supplements in addition to fiber from food, and noting that the total gram and total amount of fiber is really what seems to be beneficial here. The few of the studies that I read looked at some anywhere between maybe 28 and 35 grams of fiber a day. And at last recall, I'm thinking that our typical intake is about 15 grams of fiber in the U.S. So it's not very high. But, you know, one thing people can do is say, well, if I eat a regular cereal that's not very high in fiber, maybe I add in 1/4 cup of All Bran or something like that, where you're adding a good 5, 6, 7 grams of fiber.
Well, I know, and some of the supplements are pretty weak.
They are. Yeah, many of them are weak.
How much fiber in a given amount of flax seed ground up?
Yeah, well, generally there are 2 or 3 grams of fiber in a couple tablespoons of flax seed, so that's good. Even things like adding, you know, more good fats to the diet, we've talked a bit about omega-3s, but even the whole idea of kind of globally looking at your intake and saying, well, if I'm eating a lot of things, maybe I'm using some things that are fried or pre-cooked that are fried or a little higher creamy fats, and I've changed that over to things like nuts and seeds and more flax and those kinds of things, you can really change the profile of the fat you take in, which we know is beneficial, and you naturally bump up the natural fiber. So actually, that's a way that you can do two things at once. And as you mentioned, you just really have to watch the supplementation of fiber, because, again, sometimes it's significant. Sometimes it may be a waste of your money because it's just not enough in the supplemental form.
And you mentioned you mentioned vegetables, of course. What about frozen vegetables?
Frozen vegetables are great, too. I think the main thing we know about the fruits and vegetables is if you can eat them fresh, that's wonderful. If you can eat them local, that's wonderful. If you can get some of them organic, that's wonderful. But even if you get something like frozen green beans, they're going to be high in fiber. Most of the frozen vegetables are flash frozen. They may be frozen very quickly after they're processed. It's not as if they're sitting in fluid or anything like that. And they tend to be real high fiber sources. I think the one of the best things that ever came out of the food industry was the vegetable packs that you can microwave quickly, because even though they're not fresh, they are pretty fresh tasting, and they're high in fiber, and they're good for you, and we tend to eat more vegetables because they're accessible like that. So those types of things would be a great addition.
Well, I take it that the frozen vegetables are more effective than the canned.
Well, frozen vegetables generally are less processed, and so they tend to be a little closer to fresh, so they would be a little bit better. The canned vegetables, too, are still good. Obviously, a lot of those are high in sodium, and they're going to have maybe some other things in them that that you have to use in processing. But I, you know, my rule of thumb, and when I take groups to the grocery store to look at foods, I say, you know, try to get maybe most of what you get is fresh fruits and vegetables, but always get some canned, always get some frozen, maybe some dried, to make sure you've got a wide range, so that the bottom line is you just want to keep eating produce and you never want to run out.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, you know, I know that there are some people who advocate real, real strongly for eating vegetables raw. They say that's the best. And they say that what happens when you cook them, and the more you cook them, is that you end up leaching out a lot of the nutrients. As far as fiber is concerned, does cooking vegetables really influence their fiber content?
Well, I think it influences the way the fiber is in the food. And so if a food is cooked down, and it's a lot more mushy, the cellulose is somewhat broken down. And so the bulk may be less when you eat it. In other words, part of the reason we eat fresh fruits and vegetables, because it really has a lot of this fluid and all this bulk that that makes you feel full, and you also have the fiber go through your system a little more intact and those kinds of things. So it is different when you cook food down and process it. The other thing that's, you know, of interest to a lot of people, and kind of the one of the things that a lot of people talk about with more of the you know, non-cooked foods or raw diet, raw foods diet and things, is that if you eat food in their natural in its natural way, then you get the natural enzymes that are present in food. They're not cooked down. They're not lost. And of course, nutritionally, we do lose some vitamins and minerals when you cook food. And so trying to stick with more of that fresh, if possible, is great. But, you know, I realize as a dietitian, for a lot of people, whether it's cost or accessibility, they may be unable to get as many fresh fruits and vegetables. Or even, you know, this goes to another topic, but of course, even in our community, there's just a huge, you know, concern with people who don't have enough to eat. And so they may be getting a lot of their food, even from pantries and different places where we would love to have more fresh fruits and vegetables. We have some generally, but not very many. So a lot of the things are going to be canned and maybe frozen, but particularly canned. And that's okay, too. You know, we take in what you can get.
Our guest this morning is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She's author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You can find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's president of Nutrition on the Move. She's here on the program once a month. And we take questions on diet and nutrition, and questions are welcome. We have somebody ready to go. Others can call in 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Also, you can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's another caller in Highland, line 4. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a question about taking fresh fruits and vegetables with me during the day, which is what I usually do. I will peel and section an orange or grapefruit, and I'll cut bell peppers in strips and put them in baggies and take them. And I'm wondering if I'm losing nutritional content by preparing them ahead of time that way, and if, you know, how long they're going to keep their vitamin C and their beneficial nutrients in those baggies.
Well, first of all, I'd want to say we want everybody to do what you're doing. So great job. Because actually, so much of eating more fruits and vegetables is kind of taking that little prep time, because that's where a lot of people say they're not going to eat them unless they're accessible and you can just pick them up and eat them very quickly. So great for you. You know, by and large, you're way out, you know, you're getting super benefit by eating them, even if you lose a little bit of the vitamins or minerals. Particularly something like vitamin C and peppers. Peppers are really high in vitamin C, so are the oranges you're talking about. When you cut peppers, you lose a little of that simply because it's open to air. But part of what you're doing is then putting in a Ziploc, or if you put them in containers quickly, then you can't really, they can't oxidize as much. And so that's exactly what you want to do. Have them in some type of container then. And I don't know the exact percentage of what you lose. I'm sure some of our food scientists here would know that exactly. But the amount, I would say, would be negligible compared to the benefit you're getting from that. So I wouldn't really worry about that. I'd say if you've got those prepared and you're able to eat more of them because they are prepared ahead of time, then you're doing great. I think what we do know is if you cut fruits and vegetables and have them sitting out for a while, or if they're in liquid for a while or things like that, maybe more of those nutrients will leach out. But if they're not open to air, and if you're eating them rather quickly during the day, and so I wouldn't worry so much about that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and again, other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to come back just for a second to the subject of sports drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing some kind of activity where you're perspiring heavily, whether that's athletics or you're working in the yard in the summertime.
Yes.
You need to replace the fluid you lose. So I guess you could just drink water, which would be fine. And then they do have these number of different kinds of things. Gatorade is one of them that's designed to give you a little more. Is there, for most people, in addition to just replacing the water, is there anything really gained by drinking one of these things?
Well, I think it depends on what you're doing. I tell people if you're working hard and if you're very hot, you're probably going to benefit. And if you're going long enough. I mean, if you go out in the yard and you're working, it's really hot and you're going for half an hour, you're probably not losing enough sweat that it's a problem. But if you're sweating quite a bit, if it is pretty hot, a couple things happen. We know if you get some carbohydrate back in, of course, it helps your muscle energy and also helps your brain because you've got some carbohydrate, more sugar in the bloodstream. So that's helpful. If you lose much salt or much sweat, then adding some sodium in, whether that's food when you come inside or whether that's in a sport drink or something, can be helpful because it helps you maintain your fluid balance better. And we also know from studies that if you drink something like Gatorade or Powerade or a sport drink that has the sodium and carbohydrate and fluid, most people tend to drink more. So they tend to stay better hydrated if they're going long enough. Kind of a rule of thumb is if you go an hour and it's pretty hot and you're pretty sweaty, probably you can replace that with water and then just eat a meal. You're probably fine. If you go more than an hour and you're going hard and you're sweating a lot and it's hot, then you may find that you can do the task longer if you have a sport drink. You know, we think of people, say, construction workers. Construction workers probably in the summer are not going to perform as well if they just have water than if they have other things. And, of course, it doesn't have to be a sport drink. Some of the athletes I work with, they just, for whatever reason, don't like a sport drink. So we'll do things like they have a little more salt before they play or before they compete, and they have grapes or they have a bar. Or they do something else while they're with their water, you know, so they get some carbohydrate in and things. So it doesn't have to be a sport drink. It's just that everything's kind of in there easily. I mean, kind of the beef with sport drinks has been the fact of, kind of like the first caller, you know, for a lot of people, they maybe have used sport drinks instead of water for many occasions, not just when they're hot and sweaty and working hard, and that's a lot of extra calories. So you've got to really think, is this something I need? But I think a lot of people still are afraid to use them, thinking they're bad or something like that, and they're not. They're formulated to really be beneficial if you are doing those things, maybe for an hour or longer, particularly when it's hot, when it's more humid, or if you're practicing for 2 hours or something like that. Most people will practice harder if they have some easy-to-digest carbohydrate in the system. And if they're sweating a lot, it's better to take a little bit of sodium, potassium in when you're doing that.
Yeah, I would think maybe the average American diet had enough sodium in it so that in the course of your eating, it won't take you very long to make up whatever sodium you lose, unless you're exercising really intensely and losing a lot of fluid.
And it just depends upon the athlete. I mean, we have studies on athletes where they're losing, in a workout they could lose 6,000 or 7,000 milligrams of sodium. That's a lot. That's 3 teaspoons of salt, basically, that you lose. So there are those athletes who train really hard, or somebody, you know, a football player with pads in the heat. There's no way with regular food they're probably going to get that back in. I mean, it's possible, but it's would be rare. And that's why we're seeing kind of a comeback of salt tablets and using salt strips and stuff like that. But for the typical person, they're going to be able to eat a normal diet. If you go to McDonald's or someplace, you can get 2,000 milligrams in your diet. So it depends on what you're eating, of course. But it's interesting because the last several years I have had more athletes who have had problems on the other end, hyponatremia, where they're drinking water. Maybe they're trying to be healthy. They don't want a sport drink, or some runners I've been working with, and they don't want to take in extra salt because they're trying to keep their blood pressure down too and be healthy. And it turns out they end up having trouble on the other end. They have trouble with fluids because they're not taking in enough sodium, so their body's kind of out of whack. And so it's just important. If you sweat a lot, you do need to take in more sodium. The more you sweat, the hotter it is. The more you really need to be aware to salt your food, maybe take a sport drink, those kinds of things.
Okay. We have another caller, Oakwood, and this is line 4. Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
I have a question. I got PMR, and on the TV, I'd seen a vitamin. I guess it's a vitamin. It's called Nopalia, Nopaloa. It's supposed to be a cactus juice, and it's supposed to be good for inflammation of the blood. I just wondered if you ever heard of that.
Well, I have heard of using cactus juice. I've not to date seen any good studies on whether cactus juice is actually beneficial or not. There may be, and probably are, antioxidants in cactus juice and some things that look to be nutritionally beneficial in cactus juice. But I've not seen good studies to show that, yes, this does help with inflammation of the blood or any type of inflammation. But I will look that up, and I will see what I can find out. There's certainly, when you look at infomercials and things that are out there, there have been some things that really are sound and good and that really can benefit people. There are also, just to be aware, there are a lot of things that are marketed that really are not beneficial or haven't been studied. Again, it might be interesting and maybe it would help someone, but I always like to see the actual study to say, oh, is this a real good? Have there been a few studies on here to show that it might be beneficial? And that doesn't mean it's not going to be helpful that I haven't seen it. Perhaps there are some, but in looking at kind of some of the reviews when we're talking about inflammation with this topic, with arthritis and things, cactus juice has never, from the studies that I've looked at and things, has not been mentioned as something that's been useful as far as research shows. But again, that there's a lot of things out there. So, but I will take a look at that.
Well, I just wondered because, you know, there's always someone trying to sell something.
Yes, that's for sure.
You have to be aware of what they're trying to push off on the public.
And to know that pretty much anything can be out there and marketed and sold.
That's right.
So we do have to be careful of that.
That's very true. I thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Other questions are certainly welcome. We're moving into our last 15 minutes in this hour of focus with licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. So if you have questions about the relationship between food that we eat and health, give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Was there something else that you know you wanted to mention?
I guess there'd be a couple other things I might just mention because we might have some listeners interested in this or things that they've heard of. And, you know, for example, maybe is a vegetarian diet helpful for arthritis? And actually, there have been a few studies to indicate that it may be beneficial to move towards more of a vegetarian diet or more of a plant-based diet. That only makes sense because generally people who eat vegetarian, in general, if they're eating a good vegetarian diet, they're getting a lot more fruits and vegetables and maybe nuts and seeds and things like that. So that makes sense. So if you're kind of wondering about that, really a few studies have been positive in that area. One of the things I've heard about before and that I've seen mentioned a few times is eating gin-soaked raisins. And so
gin-soaked raisins.
Okay. And many people claim that this works and this is a miracle for arthritis. And actually, there have never been studies to show that it would be therapeutic. So raisins themselves are actually quite high antioxidant fruit. So that's a good thing. But there's nothing to say that using a gin-soaked raisins will actually be beneficial. But we do sometimes hear about that. And, excuse me, we talked about omega-3 fatty acids, but there's also an omega-6 fatty acid, gamma-linolenic acid, or GLA, that we might hear about. And that's going to be also thinking things like black currant oil or borage oil, evening primrose oil, or things like that. And so there have been several studies to show that it may relieve the stiffness and pain of rheumatoid arthritis. And so that may be, you know, in addition to omega-3 fats, that's another thing that's being looked at closely. And I guess a few other things that I hear about bovine cartilage, actually taking cartilage, and studies have not indicated that that's beneficial. I think people automatically think, oh, that'll build my cartilage, but it, you know, doesn't look good for growth of cartilage. And bromelain. And bromelain is, it's actually an enzyme. It's a substance in pineapples. And has thought to maybe reduce the swelling of osteoarthritis. And there have been a few studies that show that might be beneficial. We don't know for sure, but that's something probably in the question mark area. So if people have seen things on that, I'd say, you know, keep your eyes open for those types of things. But those are some things that, you know, I might hear more about or see that have been looked at.
Okay. Well, we have some other callers. Spring Bay, next, line 4. Hello.
Just wanted to ask about tart cherry juice. I've been drinking 2 tablespoons with 8 ounces of water for a couple of years, and if I miss a couple of days, I do notice I get tight again and all of that, and seems to work for me, and plus it's a refreshing beverage, and I'll get off, and hopefully you'll comment on that. I'll talk with you later. Thank you.
Yes, thanks for the call. You know, there are certainly particular fruits and vegetables or compounds in fruits and vegetables that may be more beneficial. And tart cherry juice is one that I would definitely give the thumbs up to also. It's been looked at for decreasing inflammation for a lot of things, and it's kind of popular now with for use in athletics, for athletes who are training really hard to help decrease inflammation. There are particular brands out now marketed specifically to athletes and also marketed for those with arthritis. And cherry juice is if it's the real tart cherry juice like you're talking about, which usually with that you would mix some with water because it's very strong and very tart, the 100% pure cherry juice. It's an area where we do think there's a lot of antioxidants in that. It's very powerful in that way. So I would say that that would be a very reasonable thing to add to an addition to what you're doing, particularly if you have arthritis or inflammation, because there have been some studies that have looked at it and found some benefit. And so that food in particular, I'd say yes, kind of similar to what you might look at with pomegranate and pomegranate juice. And although the cherry juice specifically seems to have some other compounds that have some additional benefits. So yes, I think that's a wonderful idea.
Okay. Line one. Champagne, hello.
Yes. If you are basically a vegetarian, you can be very loose because it's too much fiber. Can you list a few items that are lower in fiber that could be useful?
Well, I think it depends on what type of vegetarian you are. I mean, for some people, they're vegetarian. They don't have meats, but they would use milk products. And of course, milk products in general and cheese and things like that, or even soy milk and soy cheese and those types of things are not very high in fiber. They're a good addition for protein, but they're not necessarily real high in fiber. So I do find sometimes people get a lot of fruits and a lot of vegetables to the point where it's actually too much on their gut and it's difficult. And maybe they're not getting enough of the proteins to maximize that out. Sometimes vegetarians don't get enough fat. So if you, let's say, add more things like olives and olive oil and those, that's not really a lot of fiber, but it adds some good calories and some good fat. And you can shift your diet to where you're still getting four or five fruits and four or five vegetables, but you definitely are adding maybe some more soy or milk products or things like that, or the oils. And that might be one shift you could make. The other thing might be the type of fiber you're taking in. So, for example, if you're taking in a lot of things like corn and peas and those types of vegetables or grain type vegetables, that could be a lot of bulk and a lot of fiber, or whole wheat bread that adds bulk to the diet and you end up going to the bathroom more. But if you switch and maybe have some of those things, but also more legumes, lentils, red beans, things like that, black beans, those are more gummy fibers. So
rice?
And rice too, certainly rice. I mean, white rice itself doesn't have much fiber because the outside is taken off. White pasta, regular pasta without being high fiber pasta or whole wheat pasta, still good for you. It's fortified, just doesn't have the fiber. So, of course, we usually say eat the whole grain pasta. But sometimes I find for my clients, if they eat a little bit more beans, it actually helps them because that's more the gummy fiber that doesn't necessarily add the bulk as much as it kind of is more gooey or gummy. And that can keep you a little bit maybe less regular in some cases.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, very good. And Shanoa here, another caller here, line number four. Hello.
Hi, I have a question about, well, two questions. One is the breads that they say are fortified with an artificial type of fiber, is that as good for you as natural fiber? And two, is pickled herring considered one of the good fish like salmon and mackerel? I never see herring listed.
Yeah, good questions. The bread question first. The one thing you want to look for is 100% whole grain bread. That usually does not have the extra fibers added. Some of those fibers that are added are more fillers. They are fiber, but they're not as good as the natural fibers you find in 100% whole grain. So that's really the main thing to look at for bread. I should say 100% whole wheat or 100% whole rye, or the grains should be, the first ingredient should be 100%. And then you're in good shape, so you don't have to worry about maybe the extra fillers. The herring is also a good source of omega-3s. It's just that maybe you probably don't hear it as much because people don't eat it as much, but herring is also pretty high in omega-3s. It would be good. So are sardines. So sardines, we don't hear about as much, but they're also a very good source of omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Well, we have another caller here, Georgetown. This is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I take calcium supplement and was just wondering if one is better or the other, the citrate or the carbonate.
Well, there are people who believe on either side. I think in general, when we look at calcium, Some of it depends on the brand that you choose, because we have studies indicate some brands maybe dissolve better than other brands. Usually we look at calcium citrate as being a very good source. Sometimes calcium carbonate or calcium citrate might be digested better for you. They might give you, you might feel less bloated on one or the other. And so we don't, I wouldn't say personally that I worry as much about the type it is. I think you want to be able to handle it. We know that maybe 500 or 600 milligrams of the calcium either way at one time is probably the most you should take in. There are supplements now with 1,000 milligrams at a time, but we know you get up to that level, you're going to absorb a lower percentage of that. It's just too much at one time. And
right.
So I would take one that you feel your body handles well. And I've also known clients who do one of one and one of another. So
okay.
they're
trying to get it covered one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two kinds. If you take calcium in a supplemental form, generally, again, you want 500 milligrams or 600 at a time, but no more. Most people benefit from taking it twice a day rather than once. So
right.
If you would take it in the morning and take it at night. But I don't worry as much about the type as just making sure you're getting enough in. We still know many people in the U.S. are low in calcium.
Right.
And so even though we know to take it for most people, we still have a lot of people who don't do it. And, of course, we worry more when we get older and have osteoporosis and problems like that. But we probably need to be thinking about that early on. So it's good that you're aware of that.
Right. Well, I've already got the osteoporosis, and that's why I want to make sure that I'm getting full benefit of what I am taking. And that's what I was wondering, if there was one that was better than the other. So you think either one probably?
I think either one is fine. Sometimes it also depends on the medications you're taking and if you're taking other things as well with how they'll be absorbed. But that might be, and that might be a good question for your doc. With any other medications you're on, should you be taking one type or another, or you know, would that be a concern for other things you're using or taking or things like that?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good, thank you. And to Champagne, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was wondering about a couple of things. I was listening driving into work this morning, and when you were talking about helping with arthritis with fruits and vegetables, I was wondering if it really mattered whether it's fruits or vegetables. I know I don't have any trouble at all getting plenty of fruits in during the day, but I have a little more trouble with trying to get vegetables in because it's a lot easier to pack fruits for breakfast and lunch and such.
Yes, and I think that's really common for a lot of people, where it might be easier with one or the other, particularly fruits would be easier. I would say, here's a rule of thumb, try to get, you know, at least, most of these studies, again, that show benefit are 8 to 10 servings a day. And a serving is about a half cup or a medium-sized apple or small banana or something like that. And so I would try to get 8 to 10 servings in no matter what you take in. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that vegetables in general are about a third the calories of fruits. So as long as you can manage the calories, you may be fine with fruit. There's more sugar, more carbohydrate. But if you're doing fine weight maintenance, you say, maybe I get 2 vegetables and 6 fruits, that's great. Just try to vary the color, vary the type that you take in. And then if anybody says, well, I really also trying to need to lose weight or manage my calories, they may want to go heavier with the veggies and maybe have 2 or 3 fruits and 5 vegetables, just because that drops your calories maybe 300 or 400 during the day.
All right. And then another thing, it was on one of the earlier calls, and again, Dr. Wild was part of the discussion. And you mentioned it was during the call where you're talking about, you need to be careful about people who promote things that they also happen to be selling.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned something that started with a C, and it was like something 10.
Yeah, that supplement is coenzyme Q10, or what we call CoQ10. And
CoQ10?
Right, CoQ10.
Okay.
And that is a supplement that for certain people, they may be, our bodies naturally have it or naturally produce it. But when we take in certain medications in particular, particularly cholesterol-lowering drugs,
mm-hmm. which you do,
then that decreases the CoQ10 in the body. And so kind of a typical therapeutic thing we do recommend for people, for most people, if they're on a cholesterol-lowering medication, is that generally it's recommended as kind of, to make sure you're covering the bases there, to take a CoQ10 supplement at the same time. And
okay.
So that used to be kind of considered, oh, should we do that or should we not? But really it's pretty commonplace now because we know it does decrease CoQ10 levels in the body.
Okay. And is that how it is sold, this CoQ10? And
yes.
Just like a tablet or something, or a capsule that you take?
Right, it is, and it's just sold as CoQ10. And it may depend on how much you're taking with the medication, but that would be something worth looking into for sure.
Okay. And then also, if you don't mind, I know a lot of the focus today was towards arthritis, which was another reason why I've been trying to listen. But what about tendonitis? Can diet and nutrition impact, tendencies towards tendonitis? And I'll listen to that one off the air and hopefully let somebody else get in.
Well, with tendonitis, I'd say that sometimes weight loss really helps with that because it depends on the pressure on the tendons, too. I don't know that there's near as much research on diet and tendonitis as we have on arthritis and more joints and things like that. But it makes sense that it might be helpful eating more antioxidants and more foods that are beneficial, maybe more of the fatty acids, too, if you have tendonitis. And I think it depends on what it's caused by. It might be caused by repetitive motion, that it's not going to matter what you eat until that motion is changed or something. So probably depends on how it's developed.
Well, we only have about a minute left. As people can hear, I'm struggling with a cold. And one of the things that I really wanted to ask you was, since it's pretty hard to avoid this time of year, there are things that have been suggested to boost your immune system, to maybe help you not get sick, or if you do get sick, to help your body fight it off. Anything that there's really good evidence to show that it helps?
Well, the first thing I'd say is fluids, because taking in more fluids is beneficial. It tends to help the body kind of get rid of, you know, what's going on in there. So drink more than you think you need to drink. And I would also say things like teas and having some antioxidants in there can be helpful. You know, it wouldn't be harmful to try some extra vitamin C. You know, we have the powdered vitamin C now that you can pour into water and take that. There may be indication that it lowers the length of a cold. Whether it's going to prevent something like that is not really for sure, but it might lower the length of cold. Same as zinc and things, that they might be helpful in that case. But I'd say rest and a lot of fluids would be the main thing that, you know, the fluids are really, really helpful, especially in the winter because we tend to not drink as much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thank you very much for being here. Susan Kundrat is a licensed registered dietitian. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist, president of Nutrition on the Move. She's also adjunct lecturer with U of I Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. You can find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. And she'll be back again next month.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.